Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here to continue our set of positional reviews this year, and we're on to the inside linebacker position. This is a happy topic. A lot of the Ravens' defensive positions got better as the season went on. Inside linebacker was probably the most dramatic, and the acquisition of inside linebacker, Roquan Smith, may be the most significant change to the defense all year in terms of affecting other positions. In fact, I don't even think there's a maybe about that. Joining us to talk about that is Jake Vogel. Jake, you may remember, did the Roquan Smith acquisition pod when he was there. He's an Alabama guy, knew him from there, and had some great insights into him. And we really enjoyed that. So we thought we'd have him back for the inside linebacker review here and talk about the group this year. Jake, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, wonderful for having you back. Of course, I need to thank our sponsor really quickly, Liquid Death, the water that will brutally murder your thirst. Please try to give their product a try. They've been good to us. I think probably the most interesting thing about this, Jake, is since the Ravens acquired Roquan, we didn't really know exactly what it would mean for the Ravens in terms of them being, would they still play some dime? Would they be a committed nickel team? As it turns out, they were really a committed nickel team in the second half. And some of that was having two good inside linebackers who can play, but some of it also was a lack of talent in the secondary.
Yeah, absolutely agree with you there. I really think, and we talked about this, and you've talked about it on other shows, the addition of Roquan Smith unlocked Patrick Queen to a level we hadn't seen yet in Baltimore. And I think his improved play, Roquan's level of skill, and that ability to make others around him better really made this defense in nickel a really solid unit. And then on top of that, the secondary was especially weak at the cornerback position, especially when you're looking at the slot corners and CB3, it was just tough. And thankfully, with the 14th overall pick, the Ravens were able to select Kyle Hamilton, who I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit in the show, even though it's not about safety play.
Yeah, I don't think you can avoid it. In a show about inside linebacker for a team that has a rich history of dime play, it's more than they just have a rich history and they know how to coach it and they know how to play it. And it's in their DNA from a lot of, you know, different coaching Gantt chart overlaps. If you want to think about that from, you know, it's not just one head coach who's designed there or one defensive coordinator. It's all the other position coaches that understand how to, you know, run a dime defense. And very importantly, the two guys who have been running the show the entire time, Eric DaCosta and Ozzie Newsome, I think understand the value of platooning an inside linebacker, kind of underpaying for the second player at the position, even though they've had the green dot there for much of Ravens history.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is going to be an interesting conversation going into this next season, whether Chuck Clark remains or if he's out the door, you could definitely see that green dot move to inside linebacker like it was for, you know, the majority of Ravens football as we know it.
Yeah, absolutely. So Chuck Clark's really been the exception. Eric Turner had it. Jim Leonard had it for the 2008 playoffs. I like to mention that sometimes. Eric Weddle had it at safety for a couple of games. Tony Jefferson had it for like a game and a half, I believe. And then Chuck Clark took it and has never given it up. Well, that's not true. Geno Stone had it for a game. So it's been a bunch of safeties and a handful of inside linebackers as well that have had the thing. Those are usually the two positions that can ever wear the green dot because they're the only non-rotational positions other than corner, which is just is you're often too far out of the play to come back and call the defense at that point.
Absolutely.
So we talked about this on a couple of the shows, so I don't want to go too deep into it. Let's just start with what was happening at the beginning of the year before they became a committed nickel team. They really had been let down by the dime some, and in particular in the second half meltdown against Miami. They allowed 11.0 yards per play in the dime defense that day, 286 yards on 26 plays. And that included some awful positioning issues. It was that first game for Hamilton, and he really looked terrible.
Yeah, it was a tough start to the season. The offense was at its best and the defense was at its worst, especially with those fourth quarter collapses. The Miami one sticks out more than any other game, of course. So the secondary was, going through a tough spell for sure. And I think as the year went on, Mike McDonald was able to adapt to his personnel a little bit better, understand what they knew how to do, and the players also grew, and we ended up seeing a much better unit in, the second half of the season. And with that, Roquan Smith came along.
Yep. And we'll talk about Roquan now. Just a fantastic play this season. One of the things that really struck me is when I look back at Roquan's tape, you try and watch some good games and some bad games, but so maybe that's part of the problem is I'm watching some good games and bad games and I'm picking them based on that. But the play of Roquan, very mixed with the Bears this year, not always stellar in previous years. If you look at the PFF scoring and whatnot, I did not go back to previous tape of him in previous years with the Bears, but I did look at 2022 and just he's not a entirely consistent inside linebacker. So I think he benefited also from being around good players. Maybe it's a function of not having to do as much, to cover for them.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, the Ravens are, I don't have to tell you about their, historical makeup on the defensive side of the ball, but certainly that helps. The identity of the team has been defense for really since the beginning. And having guys like Calais Campbell and young players like Justin Madubuike, Broderick Washington, Brent Urban, those guys up front frees up Roquan Smith in ways that, perhaps he wasn't able to be free, this past year while he was on the Bears for that, first half-ish part of the season. They have had talented players in Chicago in the past, Akeem Hicks, Goldman as well. But certainly when the defensive line is a little bit better, the inside linebacker play is, it's probably going to look better as well.
Yeah, I agree. And that's, having Calais Campbell and some other guys who can pick underneath can cause, already confusion there is good. But the terrifically symbiotic relationship between him and Queen. And one of the things the Ravens did a lot of, two types of blitzes that showed up in a fairly vanilla scheme, two types of blitzes that showed up is a man lined up in the A gap and one back, and they would often switch. It would be the back guy who would rush and the up guy would drop. And I think they were just calling that on the field. As far as I can tell, that was Roquan and Queen just on the field. Queen was asked to blitz a lot. Roquan would come up, didn't sacrifice too much, I didn't think, in coverage to do so.
I would agree. And I think, going back to our pod discussing Roquan Smith, I kind of hinted at it. You did too. Roquan is the better coverage player between him and Queen. And I think that, kind of solidified itself on, for the Ravens as well this season. Queen is a very good pass rusher when he can get downhill and he is free, doesn't have to really work through the trash. And Roquan is good at everything. But, when you have one guy that's more of a specialized person, it's a little bit better to put him in that role.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the other thing, and this has been something that that Queen improved on this year in some ways, is being a pick player underneath and allowing other linemen sometimes to get a good pass rusher or an outside linebacker to stunt over either one or two gaps to make a play. And I think it's mostly two we were seeing, but he can take on a guard right on the shoulder and whatnot, and then all of a sudden somebody's over top of him. The other thing I really love with this is the cross blitzes with Roquan is that you see, and those usually come, one guy comes delayed after there's a cross, so it has elements of a stunt, but it's done from the second level. So think about this: is one guy crosses the face of, say, through the A gap or across a player who may be the only player left to block within a particular two gap segment. Okay. And if he takes the first player, part of that first player's job is to make sure the shoulders are turned properly so that second linebacker can come on a delayed basis and get home. And you really need to get home because you're sacrificing two coverage players to do it. So, you need to make that. But I thought they had probably three or four really good cross blitzes that created the initial pressure. May have in a couple of cases got the initial sack. And that's not something they did too often, but the Ravens had a lot of two-man two-man sack or pressure slash sack plays, a lot of cleanup sacks.
Absolutely agree. I mean, and one that stands out goes back to the first Steelers game this year, where Patrick Queen comes, you know, blazing out of there, getting to Kenny Pickett. This is, you know, the play that Pickett ends up getting hurt on. Queen gets there. You think he's going to come down for a sack. He somehow gets out of it, and then Roquan is right there to clean it up. Makes a very strong tackle, a little bit aggressive, but in a way that you like it as a fan of the Ravens, maybe not as much if you're a Steelers fan. And, you know, you saw that kind of play throughout the season where one of the guys would get there, and it was usually Roquan and Queen, you know, just working in tandem.
Yeah, Roquan, tremendous, good ball instincts, good ball awareness of where the football is. Seems to read it quickly, probably picks up on other clues quickly. I know on Twitter, a really, I thought, interesting clip got shown of him in right, he was in zone responsibility to just to the right of center. So it's a four-man up zone. Okay, and he had responsibility for there, and he's looking at a receiver at a receiver who's opposite him, which might have been a split tight end or might have been a wide receiver. I don't recall which. And there's another receiver to his outside, and then the thing you notice is right before the snap, he looked at the slot receiver on the other side, and the reason he's doing that is he's trying to figure out, is that guy crossing into my area? Well, I have responsibility for him. And then he knows, because the first guy went flat and the outside up front guy had him. All right. And then the second guy went deep and Roquan released him to the safety, of course. And then he knew that his responsibility was the guy crossing. And that's how you avoid getting beat on a crossing route. And unfortunately, he still did on the play. So from that perspective, he like ended up a little out of position. The guy still made the catch, but it was very good awareness. And it's the kind of thing we really missed at inside linebacker in terms of understanding how route combinations, what receiver he's going to be left with.
Yeah. I mean, that's a perfect example of it. And too bad he didn't make the play on that specific example, but understanding what three players are doing on a given play in a matter of seconds is pretty impressive. And it's something that's needed at that second level. And thankfully the Ravens have Roquan for, you know, the next number of years, 4 or 5 years. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, because then they'll get the payoff from this contract if they do. It would even be a bigger payoff if he got extended. But, you know, you got to figure based on a start, the term of the contract and the amount of money on the line. This is a win for the Baltimore Ravens if Roquan Smith is an eventual member of the Ring of Honor. And I don't think it is if he isn't. If we get to the end of this 5-year period, he's gone after 4 years, say, and they can't figure out how to get him extended or it doesn't work out or whatever, then I don't think he makes the Ring of Honor. If he plays out the whole 5 years or gets extended, then I think there's a good chance, because it'll mean that last year will be very expensive and it'll mean he's playing at a very high level for the Ravens to pick it up. So it'd be exceptionally good, I think, in that case. So if you're buying that number 18 jersey this off season, I think it's probably a pretty good purchase. And I'm going to buy one. I'll say that right now.
Yeah, but I already have mine. Haven't worn it yet. But I got it in the mail. Yep.
Very good. Okay. Did you get the pro style one or what did you get?
No, I went with the classic. I didn't want to shell out the additional money to get the stitched lettering and all of that. I've done that for a couple jerseys and it's great, but you know, it's more.
You know, it's a quantity versus quality thing. I know a young lady who's not a young lady, she's my age, but she has like 50 Steelers uniforms and she unabashedly will order her 10 favorite players in the cheapest Chinese made ones and often gets misspellings in the name or occasionally gets misspellings in the name and whatnot that come from them, you know, doing this after hours work at the factory there.
Right.
To get this done. But, you know, it is, you can make a choice. You can go quantity or you can go quality, but it's tough to have both.
Absolutely. Yeah. Right. I got mine from NFL Shop, which is the same thing as Fanatics, which, you know, pretty standard. I'm not going to some knockoff, but at the same time, it's not like the authentic field worn jersey.
You may see your coworkers cracking open a can in your 9 a.m. stand-up meeting, but it's most likely not beer. It's a New Mountain spring water called Liquid Death. You've heard me talk about this many times. Why is it called liquid death? Well, because it'll brutally murder your thirst. Plus, its infinitely recyclable tallboy cans are helping to be a bring a death to plastic bottles. Did you know plastic's not even really recyclable anymore? It ends up just going to a landfill because it's not profitable to recycle. Meanwhile, aluminum is recyclable and profitable for recycling facilities. You guys know how much I love liquid death. It's in everything I do. I take it to work. I take it to the ball club. I take it when I'm out with the kids. I got them right here on my desk because I'm recording a podcast. I'm always with it. What's cool now is I'm seeing you guys on Twitter talk about how you're grabbing your cans and going to work. So send me those stories about what you're doing and how you're cracking open a tall boy in odd situations because, hey, it's water. And not only is it water, it's the best water that you can go out there and buy. It's cold. You can drink it with whatever you're doing. So going out there, get Liquid Death at your local Harris Teeter or 7-Eleven, or find a Liquid Death retailer near you with their store locator tool by going to liquiddeath.com/filmstudy. That's liquiddeath.com/filmstudy. Yeah,
love those. I've come to really love those. One thing we haven't really got set in our house is that I don't need any more black jerseys. I have a black Webb and a black Ray Lewis, and you know it's great to have it's nice to have one, but I need more purples. Just plain old purples. Yep. All right. Anyway, let's get back to it. Roquan Smith, in terms of his run defense, just outstanding. Negotiating the position to the ball, we saw fantastic downhill play, getting to gaps quickly, stretching out the play well. And it does seem like a lot of the rest of the defense, and Patrick Queen is certainly a huge beneficiary, but there's others as well in the secondary. I think even the corners and, you know, certainly the safeties are looking at him to try and figure out what's going on, are really getting a good read off the way he stretches a play out. And he's just too quick for a lot of offensive linemen, in particular guys who are coming around on power screens with pulls, to necessarily get there in time.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, still a really fast player. Knows how to shoot the gaps, knows how to get around linemen, and really diagnoses the run and diagnoses the pass at a high level. You see that time and time again.
All right, outstanding. So the other thing that we talked about is coverage a little bit. Loved his downhill tackling in coverage. There are a whole lot of plays underneath where if you throw short of the sticks with Roquan behind you, that's not going to be a first down. So that just was some really big contributions he made were in drive ending plays. In fact, there's one of the games this year. I think it was the Cincinnati game in week 18. He had four tackles, not passes defense, not in coverage and the ball was incomplete, but four tackles short of the line of gain that ended drives, which is really incredible for one game. You think about most of your drives end up with sack, turnover, incomplete, or you know, those are really the main three, but he had four of them that were either pass plays underneath that Burrow had thrown that didn't make it, or he ran down the ball carrier.
Yeah, phenomenal. And when you were talking about that, it immediately, obviously, the most recent games were the two versus Cincinnati, and he was just phenomenal in those games, playing physical, coming downhill, and making tackles short of the sticks. And he's exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
Gives you a good feeling about the decade to come against Burrow, because it looks like that contract may get done over the season. And Roquan and Burrow will be adversaries probably for a long time to come.
Absolutely.
All right, let's move on to Patrick Queen and how he benefited a little bit from this relationship. Obviously, we talked about him some. It would not be fair to give Roquan 100% of the credit for Patrick Queen's good season. He stepped up and was doing so even before Roquan arrived.
Absolutely agree with that. Yeah, he was already playing pretty well. Started the year, you know, a little bit off and on, and then, you know, got into his groove before Roquan arrived. And I think it just unlocked more when Smith, you know, entered the Ravens facility.
Yeah, I certainly agree. Patrick Queen's start in terms of being a tackler this year was, again, a little rough. Sources vary, but he might have had 8 missed tackles in the first 5 games. And I think that if you look at PFR and PFF, that'll give you two different numbers on it. I score it myself too, and I don't have that number in front of me, but it's either eight or it's I don't remember if it's seven or six on the PFR. But then he went a five game stretch, and he had, as I count it, one missed tackle. I don't think it's the same one that PFF has, but they have him also for one missed tackle during that time, and that was really exceptional. I think PFR might have him for zero missed tackles in that five game stretch, and it was like 35 tackles or something during that time. It was a significant number of total, you know, tackle contributions that he had solo and as the assist. So it's not insignificant. It's just a completely different player. And the second to last game of that was Roquan's first game with the team. So you know, it's fair to note that he was already, you know, playing that way when Roquan got here. He already, you know, he started his significant ascension.
Absolutely. Yeah, that those numbers, you know, speak for themselves. That's phenomenal.
Now, of course, the big elephant in the room, and we've talked a little bit about pass coverage. I don't want to beat on Patrick Queen for that anymore. I thought there's elements of that that were better this year. There's other elements that probably were also better and still not good enough. Okay. Right. So the, you know, the ability to really stop the play between level two and level three to do the same kind of diagnosis we talked about with Roquan, I don't see that as really being there for Patrick Queen still, but he did at least have a couple interceptions this year, and they were of the good type, a throw beyond him that he stepped in front of with lateral movement. And that nice scissoring action is where a lot of those interceptions come from. I've talked about this on the show before, but you know, the quarterback is laser focused in when he's staring down a receiver on how do I get that ball to my guy just past the guy who's trailing him, because that seems like the big risk there. But then the other guy coming the other direction is moving in relative speed much faster because he's coming into the picture and the other guy's coming towards him with who the quarterback's trying to lead. So in a relative sense, that player often gets missed. It's great quarterbacks have that, you know, frog wide angle vision and they don't miss him. But you know, we've had Joe Flacco is oftentimes on those sorts of interceptions, just never saw the guy.
Right.
But goes good interceptions anyway for Patrick. Nice to see him get number one off Joe Burrow.
For sure. Yeah. I think some of the splash plays that he made in pass coverage were much needed. I think it helps a lot, the perception of him in coverage, even though, you know, those are high variance plays. You know, making big plays in big moments is what defense really is in today's NFL. Yeah. More than trying to just hold teams to a low yardage total without much context, I think creating turnovers at a consistent clip is really what defense is about right now, and giving the offense the most opportunities possible. You know, that's what it's about. So he did a good job in that sense. And I think he will still improve in pass coverage, you know, as the years go on, but it may just never be his thing. I don't think you're ever going to have a sentence where you're comparing Patrick Queen to, you know, Fred Warner. And that's not really fair for just about any linebacker in coverage. Sure. Because like, he's phenomenal. He can run with wide receivers like you saw against CeeDee Lamb, you know, in the Cowboys game. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he will improve. Some of the stuff that he does is just over pursues, you know, gets kind of stuck in his tracks and, you know, arrives late, or, you know, definitely just has some difficulty, you know, in the red zone. that's what I'm thinking of, in the red zone on some crossing patterns where he should be the guide if he just stays in his zone, but he moves a little bit too much and gets out of the way.
Yeah. Certainly some things to work on for Patrick Queen. I think that DaCosta is not just using GM speak when he says we really thought Patrick was the player he could be this year. I think that's the way to approach it, because I really hate it when the team says, what are you talking about? Everything's been fine his whole 3-year career kind of thing. And you know, there's a tendency to do that. Or, you know, even if you were to say now that he elevated his play to a Pro Bowl level or what, I'm not even sure that's true. Honestly, he played good inside linebacker, and he looked he was able to accentuate that even more when he was next to Roquan. I know there was a Pro Bowl movement to try and get him voted in, and he didn't make it. I think actually would have cost the Ravens some money on the cap too, by the way, if that had happened.
So
it's actually kind of a good thing. So, but anyway, the Buffalo guys and whoever else got in, I'm sure they deserved it, and Roquan certainly did, in terms of his All-Pro nod. So, it is what it is for Patrick Queen. I think there's still a possibility he's a Pro Bowl player. I think he probably should want to stay in this system, but getting back to the elephant in the room, which I really haven't mentioned yet, is I don't think the Ravens are going to pay two inside linebackers. I think it's just counter to their DNA. I think it's counter to their organizational philosophy. And when you can save a lot of money with a platoon, you take less injury risk at the position. And I've got to believe this is setting us up for a trade of Patrick Queen at some point during the next two seasons.
Agreed with that. 100%. And I was going to chime in real quick when you were talking about the Pro Bowl. It definitely helps in the short term with the cap situation that Roquan did not get a Pro Bowl. But I have to believe if for whatever reason he got into the Pro Bowl and maybe some GM that's not paying attention as closely to his entire body of work, yes. That a Pro Bowl nod for him would be more alluring, and that maybe the Ravens could get a deal done, with a little bit more draft capital for a player like Queen.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Obviously, right now Queen has a lot more value than he will a year from now. If he's got 2 years left of team control, one of the things that came out of the presser was that Eric DeCoster wasn't willing to say whether Patrick Queen is going to get the fifth year option or not. It's not that expensive, so I think he would be my guess in a vacuum. But with the Ravens and the Jackson situation being what it is, and probably also not wanting to spend the money, I don't think they want to, get in a situation where they say anything that Queen would be unhappy with later. He might interpret as a promise or whatever. And the other thing is, you really just don't want to tip your hand in any way that you don't need to the other teams in the league who might acquire him from you if you do truly want to trade him. So they'll make the move when they make the move, and they'll not do it if they can't. I think they're being good about it to say we've got two good players there right now. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, we get a great 2023 out of both of them. And if not, hopefully get some significant draft capital for Patrick Queen.
Agreed with that. A quick question for you. Wouldn't it be more beneficial for them to give him that fifth year option, even if they're not going to keep him? Or do you think that's something that they should just leave untouched in trade prior to that deadline coming up?
That's it. Because for starters, the new team won't know any better than the Baltimore Ravens will. Okay. On whatever date it is, it's early in the league year that they have to announce that tagging, that fifth year option is given. To answer your first question, yes, the other team would want him to be set up for that, but the other team might also say, you know what, don't put the fifth year option on him because we're not sure he's worth that. But if you trade him to us, we'll try and work on a deal in season with him that extends him. And we'll get the 1 year out of them. So it could be, they might be thinking about it from that perspective. Right. But either way, they've got the decision to make. I'm sure if the date comes up, they'll think very strongly about giving them the 50-year deal. But that has not come across uniformly for inside linebackers. The year of the two Devons, Devin mm-hmm. White got it. Devin Bush did not. So the Steelers, they're an organization that understands things. And they said, you know what, he's been pretty good for us, but we're letting him go.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. So anyway, obviously the inside linebacker situation is closely tied with the safety situation. The Ravens safety group still looks very deep right now. It still looks deep, even with Hamilton as a slot corner. I mean, we can talk about him as being a matchup player or this or that. He's not any of those things. He's a slot corner right now. And that could change. He could move to a different position. I think he could unlock even more value in his own play from it. But I personally would be loath to do that if I were, Mike McDonald right now, if it in fact is his choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Hamilton played extremely well at the slot corner position, much better than I expected and probably most Ravens fans, considering that wasn't what he did at Notre Dame. He was just a really good safety, not as much as a slot corner, although he did play a good bit in the box, and I think that's where his next progression would go if Chuck Clark ends up being traded or cut this offseason. I think a trade makes more sense. It just, you have to have, you know, multiple bidders.
You probably do have to have multiple. You probably do have to have multiple, because if it's one, they'll just say, you know, we'll wait. But if the Giants and Jets both want him, and you know, those are two organizations right. that certainly know the value of Chuck Clark, then they might say, I'll tell you what, we'll give you a fourth or a fifth for, probably not a fourth, probably a fifth for him. And you know, he's got a team friendly contract for this year. He's not overpriced or anything for who he is. He'll come in and lead your defense if you've got a short coming there. If you've got a rookie inside linebacker, or you just drafted your next signal caller, Chuck Clark could be perfect for your team in terms of calling the signals for 1 year. Yeah, I would think somebody should want him, but then again, nobody really gets the value of the Ravens players outside the organization if they don't have, you know, kind of obvious star traits like Za'Darius Smith or Matthew Judon. And I think that actually might be a good thing for the Ravens is that, you know, they have these very cool platoon fits like Patrick Ricard or Chuck Clark who don't really make sense to anybody mm-hmm. else in the same way.
Agreed with that as well. So with that being said, what would you say the odds are of Chuck Clark being on the team in 2023?
I would like to see it. And I'll tell you what, here's what I'd like to see, because depth never holds up. That's the first rule of football. I would like to see Clark at strong safety. I'd like to see Hamilton at slot corner. I'd like to see Williams, obviously, at free safety, really defined roles there. But the one exception would be, if Queen is gone, I'd like to have Clark then free to move up to play his old dime back role on obvious passing situations, which might cover anywhere between 27-28% of snaps and up to as many as about 43% or 44% of snaps if you're doing. And that's not only that it's that percentage of snaps, they're super high leverage snaps, guys. Mm-hmm. These are the really important snaps you need to win in the NFL. And if that happened, then Stone, I think, would be very good at going to the back end. And then that protects the team, acts as an umbrella over all of the safety positions if they're missed. Stone would move in at free safety as he did this year, and I thought played very well. Clark obviously has multiple positions he can take over. The only position where you'd really, really, really suffer from an injury is if anything happened to Hamilton at slot corner.
Agreed. I think that's going to be a key for the Ravens this offseason in the draft and in free agency to bring in some more corner depth. Mm-hmm. And not just depth, too. I think you're going to need some starter-level quality players coming in there.
Yeah.
We can get into Marcus Peters if you want. Just touch on that. If you think he'll be back or no. Yeah.
We got to move on to the other inside okay. linebackers here. And I apologize for doing that to you, but we have talked a lot about Marcus Peters in the cornerback show, and I want to have people listen in on that. Please do. But we're going to move on and talk about Josh Bynes here. Unfortunately, Josh looked a little slower. He had been beaten Father Time for a long year, always kind of a joke to me that the Ravens could sign him whenever they want. He could fix their inside linebacker core. And if you have an underperforming inside linebacker, you just point to the phone and say, you know, I can have Josh Bynes here in a minute. I just have to pick up that phone. He's like Kaiser Soze. That's Josh Bynes' name is to any underperforming inside linebacker. But anyway, team guy, I think future clearly in coaching. And I love the way the Ravens treated their veterans this year. They do that, you know, pretty normally. They did it obviously with Boyle, with Bynes. They probably did it with some other players that I can't think of. I wouldn't count what they did with Worley as being particularly, you know, in his favor, but it was because they liked him. They made 18 transactions with Daryl Worley this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else about Bynes? Future coaching? What do you think?
I do think he has a future in coaching. I believe he's expressed it multiple times in press conferences, and he has the right demeanor for it. And he seems to love the Ravens organization. So, I mean, I say similar to Zach Orr, bring him right back. if he wants to, you know, learn and coach on the way, then that's great.
All right. That's outstanding. I would love that too. Whether I think he could, he didn't play special teams this last year, which is one of the things that was keeping him from being active even after he was kind of out of the job, but I bet he could coach special teams. He certainly played it a lot during his career. So it's would really be a question.
Oh yeah.
Malik Harrison, we talked a little bit about at the outside linebacker, but we'll talk about him a little bit more here. Played about 21% of the snaps this year, and a lot of that was at outside linebacker and not inside linebacker, where he was effectively an early down run-stopping outside linebacker who was relieving a lot of the snap pressure on that group early in the season when there just weren't anybody who could stand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you saw it at Ohio State, and you had some Ravens fans clamoring for it for whatever reason. We saw him in that role early in the season, and thankfully the outside linebackers got healthy. We brought JPP in, and then we didn't have to worry about Malik Harrison playing on the edge.
Yeah, Malik did a bunch of good things. Pass rushing was not one of them this year, right. but he did some good things. He wasn't in there for many passing downs, but and I didn't look at his pass runs difference. But even then, he's going to be not completely green lit to rush the way you would be when you're pinning your ears back and can get wide on third down and fan out that tackle and, you know, toy with your catnip kind of thing. That's just not Malik's game. At outside linebacker, it limits what he has to do in coverage some, which I think is probably good because he hadn't been getting the job done really at inside linebacker in coverage.
Agreed with that. I think he is a good run defender, and that's kind of about it at this point. He can, you know, he can contain, you know, hold the edge a little bit from that outside linebacker position, and that's about it, I would say.
So here's the question for Harrison is, does he come back to play to be the base weak side linebacker next season? Because, I mean, presumably if Patrick Queen is traded, do you bring Harrison back to be that? Or do you look outside the organization and start over and say, you know, Harrison really wasn't getting it done there to start with? Or do you at least have another guy who could step in as the starter? And, you know, the kind of match you want is like an LJ Fort, a guy who can mm-hmm. do some coverage, who also can do a little bit of everything kind of well at that weak side linebacker spot, and also play special teams while you're at it, if you really want to do it. Harrison's clearly has a place on this team for years. Let me get your answer on that question. First of all, do you bring him back to play the weak side?
I wouldn't, you know, put him in with ink at all, but maybe you bring a pencil with a good eraser. you put him on the roster, you know, tentatively for sure. And then you see how the draft goes and you see how free agency works out and some cuts. And then you go from there, I would say.
All right. It's one of these players that is pretty secure in his role because of his special teams play that he, you know, obviously is liked there. There's some other special teams players who might be graduating. In particular, I think Welch, this is probably his last year with the Ravens. We'll see. He might have one more, but I would guess that he's not going to be back. When we look at other players, Josh Ross will be back next year and mm-hmm. probably trying to compete for that weak side spot.
Yep.
Ross is a mic in college, correct?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. I can't recall exactly. He wasn't one of the players I looked at during the draft process last year. So I'm actually trying to remember. But anyway, showed certainly some coverage chops during the preseason. We've learned by touching that hot stove many times, that's not the best barometer of things.
Yeah, I think the preseason in general is not the best barometer for expectations of players in the regular season. That certainly extends to linebacker play. But with that being said, I am excited for Josh Ross, especially with that Michigan connection, experience with Mike McDonald, you know, previously. I do have some decent hopes for him developing and, you know, sticking on this roster.
Okay. Some other guys who played this year, AJ Klein, played 18 big snaps. Delshawn Phillips played a lot of special teams. He played one defensive snap and he almost got a roughing the passer penalty. I don't know if that had anything to do with it in terms of him not getting time after that, but he jumped on the pile on a quarterback and it looked like the official was getting close to doing it. In fact, it looked like Delshawn really knew he'd done something wrong and was kind of like getting up quickly to indicate that he hadn't, kind of the way, you know, like defensive lineman kind of throws his way up, say, I'm not holding, or an offensive lineman rather. Anyway, I think that pretty much handles the other guys, but the Harrison is the guy. I think Ross could do this too. Ross could be an integral part of the team because he's got 3 years remaining under team control. But Harrison entering now year four, his chance to stick is to become the new Albert McClellan. If he's if he becomes an inside linebacker / outside linebacker, exactly what McClellan was, good run stuffer, which he'll have to make sure he can continue to do that from the inside and the outside. And then he also has a huge role covering kicks. If he can do all that, Harbaugh certainly has a soft spot for that when making final calls on the roster. And I think there's a pretty good chance he could be signed to a set of consecutive 2-year contracts. I do not believe there is a spot out there for Malik Harrison as some other team's Mike linebacker to start. Yep. So it's really, this is a case of maximizing career value and trying to figure out how can I earn $4 million more playing this game for 4 more years? And I think Harrison can do it playing special teams, and there won't be a lot of pressure. If he does it well, there's never really a lot of pressure to get rid of him because that veteran salary cap minimum really plays into the team's hands in terms of keeping cap costs down.
Agreed with that. And I think that was the perfect example of what Harrison should aspire to be at this point, an Albert McClellan type, Brendan Iamadejo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just a special teams ace. And if he can do that, then he will have a long career. I mean, you know, as long as he wants to, and as long as he's healthy, there will be a job for him, especially in Baltimore where they care so much about special teams.
Here's my prediction question for this show. We'll just do one of these. Is Harrison had 21% of the snaps this year. Do you think that's what is the probability he'll ever play more in a single season than that the rest of his career? I'm writing down my number.
Okay.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I would say about 35%.
Okay. I said 25, but we're both accounting for injury in that thing. So yeah, opportunity can happen. Some other team may have an injury and look at the Ravens and say, hey, this is a guy we'd like to have. Might be hard to pry him away under those circumstances. It probably happened with the Ravens, honestly, if it happened at all.
Right.
Anything else about 2023 we want to discuss? Because I think we've covered much of what we're doing. So the big question is really weak side linebacker. Will they go back to a platoon or will they stick with Patrick Queen? They clearly have something really nice. And by the way, we're talking a lot about trading Patrick Queen. It's not like I don't realize that the Ravens really have something special in this tandem of inside linebackers.
Yeah, I agreed. And for me, Queen is right now a good enough player or very good player that you do not want to trade him unless you're getting the appropriate value. There is a point where you do not trade him. In my opinion, you know, a second to third rounder is kind of that range. Anything below that, I feel like you're getting better value for the 2023 team than you would be getting in a return of a player that you might draft.
Yeah. I completely agree. In fact, I wouldn't go down to a third. I think the question is whether the JJ points fit in at the top end or the bottom end of a one or the top end of a two, maybe as far down as the mid end of a two, but think about what Orlando Brown was traded for. Orlando Brown, you know, obviously a star player, but he's about to get paid. And he only had 1 year left on his rookie deal. And that he wasn't at the minimum anymore. So he'd been escalated already. So he was making about $3.5 million or something at the time. But he was traded for what equivalently was a mid-second round pick at that point. Patrick Queen, I think the Ravens would look at it this year and say, look, 2 years of value, you're going to have to really give us something for Patrick Queen. We've done the tough part. We've waited for him to be a good player. He's that now. He's got 2 years left of team control. He's worth a high second round pick probably. And it might be a low one for a three kind of trade that mm-hmm. you end up with if you're maybe being a little bit optimistic for Ravens fans, but something like Marquise Brown last year might be where he would fit in.
I agree with that, and really for me it's more of a second. That's kind of where I cut the draw the line, but mm-hmm. I just threw the third in there in case others didn't see the value quite the same way.
All right. Well, they don't have to agree with you, but you know your stuff, Jake. So I'm sure they'll understand that. Let's see. Anything else we need to talk about? Any possibility the Ravens use a draft pick in inside linebacker this year?
If I was going to put some odds on it, it would be very low. I would. Barring a Patrick Queen trade, it would be very low. If Queen does not get traded, it's much lower. If Queen gets traded, then of course, it could bump up. Probably 15% probability, okay, in my opinion.
All right, that's a good mix of probabilities there. I could see you're weighting it to 30% Patrick Queen gets traded, and then 50% chance, yep, they draft an inside linebacker kind of thing. Yeah. I think that's probably a pretty good guess. I think that even with a late round stab, the Ravens just have too many needs to look, right, at inside linebacker. Of course, they look for value, but it's more important to get value the earlier your pick is in the draft. When you're drafting late in a fourth round pick, a fifth round pick, if there are cases where somebody drops completely out of a reasonable value range. But most of the time that doesn't happen. There's some, flag about the player that the Ravens may have as well. And so they don't usually, draft opposite need late. You draft opposite need early.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. And sometimes you do see it, like you're talking about tight ends, the classic double dip, mm-hmm, Ravens taking Mark Andrews in the third round. The value was there, and thankfully he turned out to be the better player in that 2018 draft class. But yeah,
great. And that's happened like four times now, so
yeah.
We're good. Well, Jake, always a pleasure to talk football with you. Thanks for coming on and talking about the inside linebacker position, and we've enjoyed both of our conversations recently, and they've been the pleasant topic of Roquan Smith being involved. We'll make sure we have you on for a regular season show, and like also have you on for a draft for a particular position if you're interested in that.
Yeah, I would love to. We'll definitely talk about that.
All right. I'll say, tell folks where they talk football with you online.
Yeah. So I'm on Twitter primarily. So my handle is on the screen here. If you're watching this on YouTube at all, no, we're not doing that.
No, it's just a bot. Yeah.
It's at Real Jake Vogel, R-E-A-L, Jake Vogel, V-O-G-E-L. Feel free to talk Ravens or Georgia football. I'm very proud of my Bulldogs. Back-to-back national champs. So thank you for having me on.
All right. Well, congratulations on Georgia's incredible national championship performance. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, the big show type where we have coming up is that one play. You pick one play in Ravens history, and we talk about that for about 15 minutes. Whatever angle you want to. I'll always have kind of a historical bent on things. How did this change things? How was this a turning point? But some people, one photographer wanted to talk about what his view was on the field for some plays. And another person, wanted to talk about it was their first football game. And this is what got me interested in this player. All that's fine. You pick it. Have your own reasonings. You be you. And I'll be happy to have you on the show. And we're looking as broad a group as possible. I'm looking to meet as many new people as possible through this process. And so if you've got 15 minutes to spend on that, DM me with the play you want. And they're always open, and I'll respond to you very quickly. Jake, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you so much, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.